Welcome back to Always Hold On to Smallville. In this podcast, we talk about each and every episode of Smallville, the Young Superman series that ran from 2001 to 2011 on the WB/the CW. This week, we're talking about the 12th episode of the first season, Leech, and I'm joined by my friend Mike Krause. What's up, Mike?
Hello, hello.
So Mike's been on the podcast a few times now, talking about a couple episodes, talking about Batman v Superman. So he is a veteran of the podcast. So
I am.
Have your thoughts changed any on Batman v Superman?
I have not had a chance to see it again, so no, it hasn't. But
well, it's not going to be in theaters long.
No.
So you better hurry.
I should probably jump on it now, right?
Right.
I have a feeling I'm going to like it more the second time I see it.
Well, once you know what to expect, yes.
Yeah, yeah. But I'm really looking forward to that extended cut, though. I'm really looking forward to seeing what was cut out.
And that's not even, like, the full extent of what was cut. Because they said there was, like, a four-hour cut. Like, the initial draft. But the one they're actually releasing is going to be, like, 3.5. So there's still more footage out there.
Good heavens.
Which is, I mean, part of me thinks, like, man, should they have just cut it in two like The Hobbit? Although I hate it when they do that kind of stuff. Like, it might have, you know, well, it would have made more money.
Yeah.
And, I, you know, I was wishing that they would release the extended rated R cut to theaters just, like, to have that experience. Like, why not, right? Because you're releasing an incomplete product. Like, when you know, like, oh, here's an extra hour. It's like, what? That makes a huge difference.
Yeah.
An extra hour? Or, you know, I guess when you do the math, it's probably an extra 45 minutes. But
still, yeah.
45 minutes. I mean, we're going to see these movies because it's what we do. But,
yeah.
Well, you know what else we do is we talk about Smallville. That's the purpose of this podcast. So, so do you have any memories of Leech, Krause?
To be honest with you, I just remember this being the first of many episodes where Clark loses his powers.
Yeah. So I feel like we should add a tally category to the series tally board to get it out front here. This is one of my favorite episodes of the series. Because it really, analyzes, like, what Clark Kent is without his powers and how he's more than just, you know, his superpowers. Even without them, he tries to be Superman. And that's what makes Clark Kent Superman, you know.
I can see that.
So we'll get into it here, but this is one of my favorite episodes, and it is a trope they start using more and more as the series progresses about, you know, switching powers and powerless Clark and all that stuff. But this is the first time doing it, and I think they did a really good job. But we'll go ahead and jump into it. Leech.
Clark, you should have seen it. Eric threw the guy like 30 feet.
Not only did he recover my laptop, but I got my first byline in the Smallville Ledger.
It's great, Clark.
Come on, Clark. How can you be so blasé about this?
The guy stopped a purse snatcher. It's not that big a deal.
Clark. Hey. Thanks for getting that story in the paper.
Thanks for saving my computer. It's my life. Okay, how pathetic did that just sound?
So, who came up with Superboy?
I did.
Really? I like that.
Thanks.
Yeah, I thought it was kind of lame.
Leech is the 12th episode of Smallville's first season. It first aired on February 12th, 2002. It was written by Timothy Schlattman and directed by Greg Beeman. Now, looking up the writer here, Timothy Schlattman, he's got a lot of letters in his name, first of all. But he actually went on to become a writer on Dexter, which was nominated for several Emmy Awards and Writers Guild Awards, Golden Globes, and things like that. So have you ever watched Dexter?
I loved Dexter up until halfway through the series run.
What happens then?
Well, I felt kind of like Smallville. I felt like they got away from what the core of the character was, and just started stretching it.
Well, as I understand it, Dexter had a very polarizing finale that was most people consider disappointing, which we can relate to here on Hold On to Smallville. But we'll get there in about 3 years or whatever. But anyway, yeah, so interesting. And he's currently an executive producer on Under the Dome, Tim Schlattman.
The Stephen King book, right?
Yeah, that they made a TV show out of, which is always kind of questionable. But when you make a TV show out of a book, limited material there. But anyway, he's an executive producer on it. So this guy went on to bigger and better things. Not necessarily better. I don't know.
But
he went on to different things. But yeah, I have not seen Dexter, have not seen Under the Dome. So I don't really have anything else to say about that guy. But his other writing credits include Roseanne. And, yeah. And then Fox's Get Real. I don't even know what that is.
No.
But I'm going to click on IMDb here and find out. Oh, interesting. Get Real is an American television series that aired on the Fox network and ran from September 1999 to April 2000. So a Fox show that only lasted one season. No surprise there.
go figure.
It follows the fictional Green family in San Francisco. It stars Eric Christian Olsen, who played the young serial killer in Hourglass. Jesse Eisenberg.
Really?
Yeah. And Anne Hathaway in their early roles.
No kidding.
Hathaway and Olsen portrayed the older siblings to the central character. Hathaway and Eisenberg later reunited in the animated film Rio as the voices of a pair of blue macaws. So, interesting.
Wow, I'm going to have to look for that.
Yeah. It really is that's an interesting combination of actors there. I doubt you'll be able to find this. I didn't know Jesse Eisenberg was doing stuff that early. Like, what was he, like 10? Like, but anyway, that's a show this writer worked on. So the episode starts out, they're on a Smallville High School, some class of Smallville High School is on a geology field trip.
Geology field trip.
Rocks? Like, I don't know about you, but my science class never took any field trips, Krause.
Neither did mine, and I certainly didn't have a scavenger hunt of 10 different geological specimens I was to acquire.
Yeah, and they had, like, 15 minutes to do it? Like, that's impossible. Like, what do you do? Because the setup here is the teacher is this jerk teacher who it turns out to be the father of our guest star, Eric Summers. He's played by Sean Ashmore, who everyone knows is Iceman, of course.
Bobby Drake,
yeah. One of the few X-Men who has not been recast in these movies. It's funny, if you go to Sean Ashmore's IMDb, you know when you go to somebody's IMDb, it has the known for section, and has like it always has like the top four things they're known for? Here's the top four things Sean Ashmore is known for. X-Men. X-Men 2. X-Men The Last Stand. And, to mix things up, X-Men Days of Future Past. So.
Got a quite a variety there.
Yeah, he returned. This is before he hit. Actually, this is after the first X Men movie because this is 2001, 2002. Right. So I mean, Iceman played a small role in the first X Men movie, and then I'm hesitant to say this is before he quote hit it big because he never really hit it big. I mean, he was in an episode of Fringe I remember with his twin brother Aaron Ashmore,
right?
Where they actually played twins. Interestingly enough, his brother Aaron goes on to play Jimmy Olsen in Smallville.
Yeah.
Or so we're led to believe for three seasons until it turns out he's actually Henry James Olsen, the older brother of Jimmy Olsen. And no one comments like, hey, you know, you look a lot like so-and-so. Like, no one comments on that. Like, I would have thought, like, at least be meta about it and reference it in some way. But you had a major guest star, and he has another appearance on here, so he has two big appearances on Smallville as his character, a very memorable guest star. You have his twin brother come on as another character, an iconic character like Jimmy Olsen, and no one says anything like, hey, you look like this guy who had superpowers a few years ago and stole my powers.
They're so used to all the weird stuff happening in Smallville that they just didn't second guess
it. Yeah, by season six, they're just desensitized to it. But I thought he was good in this episode. I mean,
I did too.
He plays – his whole life is kind of a dark mirror to Clark's life, right? Because he's this, like, nerdy guy, and he has glasses, of course, before he's got powers, right? He has a crush on this girl who has a jock boyfriend, you know? So it's like, oh, it's like a mirror of Clark's life. Then he's got parents who are not the most encouraging parents in the world.
Refer to me as Mr. Summers.
Yeah. So his dad is the teacher, right? He's like – he's like, Eric, how's your scavenger hunt coming along? He's like, oh, I've only gotten a few rocks. My glasses keep fogging up. He's like, I expect you to get them all. He's like, but Dad, he's like, it's Mr. Summers at school. I'm like, oh, that's how it's going to be, huh?
Parents just don't understand, man.
Yeah, man, parents are the worst, bro. So he puts on his, like, Walkman or whatever and goes to, like, sulk on the bridge. The reason they only have 15 minutes, as we kind of joked about earlier, was there's a storm rolling in. Well, I think if there was a storm rolling in, they would have canceled the field trip, but whatever. It just took contrivance to set up the situation where there's going to be lightning, okay?
Especially, they're by a dam, too, right? You would think that's a safety concern. I would think.
Yeah, with, like, metal and all that stuff. Yeah, and as we later find out, that's, like, the Smallville power plant is down there.
Oh, is that what it was?
There's something plant, yeah. Like that. Yeah. And they're so the woods, I don't know how this Kansas works, but there's this giant dam and reservoir next to, like, the forest with a bunch of rocks. Like, if we went out in the forest right now, would we be able to find 10 kinds of rocks? Like, I don't, like, is Kansas rich in natural mineral deposits? I don't know. Questions not for this podcast, but the important thing is Eric has found a meteor rock. Does the term meteor rock annoy you?
It's, well, after it's been overplayed and, you know, hit over the head hundreds of times in season one.
Well, I feel like a lot of people get like, oh, meteor rocks. I hate that they call them that. I'm like, I think it's fine. I mean, that's what they are. They're meteor rocks.
No. Oh, yeah. No, I have no problem with them calling it a meteor rock.
I actually had more of a problem where Clark literally pulled the term kryptonite out of his ass in season two. After he talks to Dr. Swan, he finds out his planet was from Krypton and that kind of stuff. You never see the A-B connection between Clark figuring out, oh, these are pieces of my home planet. He's just like, the next right. episode, he's talking to Pete, and Pete's like, oh, I could go get a meteor rock. He says it just like that. And Clark's like, it's called kryptonite. Pete's like, is that with a C or a K? Again, he says it just like that. But that's all, they kind of brush over it. And then they have to be careful, like, when they say meteor rock, when they say kryptonite. I mean, better just to leave it as meteor rock. But yeah. Anyway, so Eric has his meteor rock, and he's, you know, listened to some Stained.
Some 90s soundtrack music here.
This will be the song we play out on, because I really like this song. It's my favorite song in this episode. I just needed someone to help me. Anyway, they're on the bus, and Mr. Summers, as we'll refer to him, right? He's like, has anyone seen Eric? He's wandered off. And Clark's like, I'll go get him. And it's just funny. Mr. Summers gives him this really weird look, but he lets him get off the bus to go look for him. And since he's rocking out to Stain on the dam there, he doesn't hear Clark. Clark's like, Eric! He can't hear him. And lightning, I believe lightning, what, is it strike the bridge? And that's what kind of throws Eric off?
It looked like it, right? It looked like it struck the rail.
Yeah, so much for lightning not striking twice in the same place, because it strikes this rail, and then it kind of gets Eric off balance. He starts to fall, so Clark rushes over to him, catches him, and then Clark gets struck by lightning, which he's like literally 2 feet away from where it struck before. This is a power transference they establish in Smallville, where like electricity or lightning, if you have a human plus a plus a meteor, what am I trying to say? You have a human being plus a meteor rock plus a Kryptonian. Those they will switch their DNA, I guess, their power, something. There'll be a transference of power here. And that has not been the case in other Superman. I've never seen this in other interpretations of Superman. This is a very unique thing to see.
Yeah, it's very convenient.
So Clark pulls him up, and you can tell that like he's having trouble pulling him up, and he sees Eric's kind of on fire, so he reaches over to put the fire out, and it burns his hand. So he's like, whoa, something's weird here. And we kind of realize what's happened. And that's the teaser. Now, before we move on from the teaser, I have to point out, Lana's necklace is back. It's finally back. This has been my obsession on this podcast for a few episodes, the lack of continuity when it comes to her necklace. And, you know, they're doing their rock hunt or whatever, and Lana comes up to Clark from behind because he kind of feels a little weak. He turns around, it's Lana, and she's wearing her necklace. And I'm like, oh, okay, the necklace is back. But this episode kind of wraps up the necklace, and we'll get into that here. But if I'm recall, I don't believe she wears it anymore after this episode, after they – put it
thank
in
God.
Box. I think it comes well. It does. It plays a role in season two a little bit for a certain episode. But other than that, I think that's about it for the necklace. They probably decided, okay, we can't keep. Well, they had already given up on it.
Yeah,
she just wasn't wearing it anymore. But
now, is that because were these episodes aired in a different order that they were written?
The only one that was out of order was Jitters. That was supposed to be the third episode, and she's wearing it a lot in that episode because back then they cared about that kind of thing. But anyway, be that as it may, the necklace is back, so I'm very happy to see that being addressed. We go with the opening credits, we come back, Jonathan's truck is stuck in the mud, he's like, Clark, I need some help over here. Which you think, like, man, how dependent are the Kents are on Clark's powers here, right?
Right.
Clark comes out to help him, and Jonathan gets back in the car, and he tries to get the truck out of the mud again. He's like, come on, Clark, stop messing around, I got things to do. It's like, come on, man. Clearly there's a problem.
Doesn't Clark have to be at school, too? I mean...
Yeah, because he misses the bus. You know, Clark, he can't help Jonathan with the truck. He falls in, like, the mud. Martha brings him a change of clothes. He's like, oh, what's happening? I don't know. Maybe I'm sick. This is weird. My strength is gone. Maybe it was the lightning. They're trying to figure out what's wrong. And the bus stops at his house. And then it just drives off. I'm like, oh, you're going to miss your bus. And he tries to run off. He's like, oh, my speed's gone too. So I start to get a very Spider-Man vibe here. I don't know if you did. So he's missed the bus. I'm like, oh, that's kind of like Spider-Man. I mean, and then the whole beginning episode, the cold open, where he goes up to his, Eric goes up to his crush, tries to give her some rocks, and the boyfriend like, hey, what are you doing, loser? Oh, here comes your dad. Aren't you glad your dad's the teacher? You know, that kind of felt like Spider-Man, where he's like, the whole scene at the where they were, the science place with the spiders, and Flash Thompson's making fun of Peter and Harry. It's like, his father will fire your father, and the teacher comes over. It's like, the next person who talks will fail this course. I kid you not. So all that was going on, and then, you know, Clark's missing the bus just like Peter does, and then we cut to what's going on with Eric the next morning, and he puts the glasses on, but he doesn't need them, so he takes them off. It's kind of like Spider-Man. So
just like Spider-Man, yeah.
But I love Spider-Man, so that's fine.
There's a few superhero movies that this kind of reminds me of, and we can call back to it a little bit later, but X-Men 2 comes to mind a little bit later.
Yeah, because of Bobby Drake, Iceman.
Yeah, well, not just that, but yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway, go on.
So Clark misses his bus, and I guess Kent's like, I guess one of us is going to have to take him to school now. What does Martha do all day, right? But anyway... Eric is late for breakfast at his house, and his dad's like, you're late. I can't afford to wait on you. I have a faculty meeting. And he's obviously, you know, his mom is very quiet. So it's they're playing up the fact that this dad is, like, just a huge jerk and, like, borderline abusive, because Eric kind of talks back to him, and the dad goes to slap Eric in the face. And Eric stops him with the super speed. He's like, how did you do that? He's like, you're the science teacher. You figure it out. He's like, all right, well, I'll see you at school. And he leaves. But it's like, they're implying he's like an abusive dad, which is pretty dark, don't you think?
Yeah, they certainly. I guess they were hoping for a moment of levity where he stopped him from hitting him. But
yeah, like, that's not funny. That's,
yeah, know, no.
It's like, wow, this got much darker than it needed to be. Like, he could have just been a jerk. And I think that you could say the dad's a little over the top, a little overbearing dad. But parents like that exist. I mean, I can totally see, like, a jerk in that situation trying to make sure that his son is just as good as all these other students and stuff like that. And they could have left it at that, but to have him, like, hit him is pretty extreme. So then we go to Smallville High School, and it's after gym class, and Clark is just spent. He's, like, covered in sweat. He's, like, limping. He's like, oh, my leg, it hurts.
Charlie horse.
Pete's like, it's a cramp, walk it off, you know, because Clark has never experienced pain before. So it's very interesting. I wouldn't say interesting. It kind of sucks for him.
Pete seemed to get a little bit of a chuckle out of it too.
It's funny. We see Clark play basketball later in this episode, and whenever I try to play pickup basketball with people, I look like Clark does in this scene here. He's just completely like, "Oh my, oh my god, my leg. What's wrong with me?" Like, it's just exhausting. So he goes over to Clark sees Eric, so he goes over to him and says, "Hey, Eric, we didn't get a chance to talk since yesterday. You know when I saved your life?"
Yeah.
He's like, "Oh yeah, thanks, Clark. How you feeling, Eric?" And Eric's like, "Oh, I feel great." Clark's like, "You don't feel different at all?" He's like, "Nope, never felt better." Clark's like, "Okay." So then Clark kind of limps away, and then Eric switches the bench press, because, you know, as we all have bench press machines in our high school locker room, he switches that to like 600, and he just starts lifting it like it's nothing. So he's enjoying it. Now, there's a subplot in this episode I completely forgot about, and it's Lana and Aunt Nell, and Aunt Nell has put the flower shop up for sale. Right?
Yes.
And I'm like, oh, I guess this is when this happened. Because I knew the Talon was going to be a thing coming out, the coffee shop that everybody hangs out at. But I didn't realize it was in this episode. Now, I was a little confused. I guess Aunt Nell says the movie theaters have been closed for a while.
Well, they kept showing Lost Boys. They weren't showing relevant movies for 2001.
Well, yeah, I mean, but you know, old movie theaters are cool. Like, I like how we have the River Oaks Theater here in Houston. Like, I love going there and seeing all movies and stuff. Out. When they're not showing, like, Rocky Horror Picture Show or The Room.
The Room.
Like, every other weekend. Like, can we get some more, like, Casablanca up in here and less The Room? I get where they do it. It has these cult followings. But
Talon Theater could have learned from that lesson.
Exactly. So clearly that The Lost Boys Saturday night was not cutting it, not bringing in the dough. So, Nell says, oh, well, the movie theater closed months ago, and I'm just going to move to a smaller store. I'm like, so what do you have to do with the movie theater? I was a little confused. Like, does she own the whole property, or I don't know what's going on. And this is something that gets, you know, talked about more in episodes coming up. So
it's a drug front, Zach. I think I'm convinced that's my theory. It was a big drug front.
Showing 20-year-old movies and selling flowers is clearly not a sustainable business. So, but this is a very important scene because we got to say, the scene between Aunt Nell and Lana makes this episode pass the Bechdel test, which we've been failing for quite a while. Now, I've been promising to look up the official definition of the Bechdel test for a while, and since this episode passed, it's an appropriate time. So I went to where else? Wikipedia, which is, you know, just as good as the truth, right? So I went to Wikipedia, and Wikipedia's definition for the Bechdel test is, the Bechdel test asks whether a work of fiction features at least two women who talk to each other about something other than a man. The requirement that the two women must be named is sometimes added, which I think is a funny caveat there. So yes, this episode passes because they're not talking about a man. So good for you, Smallville. We'll see if you can keep this streak of one going for the Bechdel test.
This is the first one.
This is not the first one, but it's the first one in a while.
Wow.
I think this is the 12th episode. We probably had three or four max, like max.
Interesting.
So moving on from that, we cut to the Kent farm, and Clark is struggling to help his dad with all these chores. And he asks his dad, he's like, how do you find the strength to do this every day? Which I thought was a pretty cool question for Clark to ask his dad, you know, because you kind of take for granted that, you know, before he came around, somebody was doing all these chores, you know?
Yeah, Papa Kent's been taking it easy since Clark showed up.
Yeah,
right?
It's just step your game up, man. It's funny because, you know, Martha and Jonathan, as they always do, they react a little differently to Clark losing his powers. Martha's like, oh, well, maybe it's temporary. You're just sick. And Jonathan's like kind of tough love. He's like, son, I don't think they're coming back, you know. And part of Jonathan is relieved, you know, because he doesn't have to worry about Clark hurting people by accident, which is what he's concerned about when he plays football and stuff, or, you know, his secret getting out and people, you know, wanting to use him for their own purposes like they did in Rogue. But at the same time, he's got to be like, oh, man, I got a lot more work to do now on the farm. This is not good for business. So then we cut to Luther Mansion because Lex Luthor is in this episode. Thought his introduction was a little delayed, but we get Roger Nixon is back, the reporter from X-Ray, and he has apparently done his research on the Lex's car accident and has presented a computer recreation model which shows Lex hitting Clark at, you know, 60 miles an hour and falling off the bridge. And he says, look, forensically, this is the only possible explanation of what happened that day. So Lex is like, all right. And Rogers is like, oh, it's going to make a hell of a story. He's like, no one's going to find out about this. And if they do, we're going to have a serious trust problem. And I love what Roger Nixon says. He's like, as opposed to the close personal relationship we have now. So I really like the dynamic here. I mean, this guy is literally just Lex's lackey.
Yeah.
He's just a sleazy reporter guy. And they don't have a lot of – he only has a couple scenes here, but he's just a good character actor. And it's good to see him again, keeping that plot line going, because Lex has not given up on investigating that car accident.
No.
So it's perfect timing then for Clark to have lost his powers, right? Because, and I like this, you know, Lex, you know, he finds out that possibly Clark has something special, super going on with him. He tells Roger, look, we're not telling anybody about this, you know, keep it quiet. And then Lex goes to talk to Clark, you know, friend to friend, face to face, man to man, right? So Clark is still struggling with his chores. It's like, you know, late at night at this point.
Working the graveyard shift.
Well, he's trying to, like, build a fence. I'm like, come on, Jonathan. This is his first day without powers. You're making him build this fence.
Where is Jonathan during that?
He's asleep, man.
Watching TV? Well, yeah.
It's like, could the fence wait?
I love how no one's helping Clark.
Yeah, because Lex pulls up, and Clark is struggling with this, and he says something like, hey, can I ask you something? And Clark's like, sure, why don't you give me a hand with this? And Lex is like, you can't lift that all by yourself. Because at this point, he's of the assumption that Clark has, you know, at least super strength, right? And this is a good scene between Clark and Lex because it just shows, like, look, Lex just wants to know the truth, right? As he tells Clark, you're the closest thing I've had to a friend. Just be honest with me about this. And it seems like this make you wonder, like, man, what if Clark had told Lex his secret? He could have saved everybody a lot of trouble, in theory, right? Lex could have still could have gone bad. I mean, who knows? It's all that nature versus nurture thing with Lex, and that's one of the most interesting components of Smallville is, you know, part of the reason Lex goes so dark is because his friendship with Clark just evaporated. So Clark just basically tells him, look, I was just a guy who tried to do the right thing. You know, what's the harm in that, right? Why do you even need to know, right? Like why do you have to ask so many questions? And he just kind of storms off back to the Kent house. And it's like, well, are you gonna finish that fence, Clark? Are you just going to leave that thing?
He's going to go wake up his dad. Dad, come help me, man.
So that leaves the Clark and Lex kind of on the rocks there. Then we cut to the next morning, and Chloe and Peter are just walking down Smallville Main Street or whatever, and I had to laugh at this shady thief who's just hanging out, like, in a doorway.
Oh, Well, I laughed at the use of another 90s, or excuse me, early 2000s song, the U2 Elevation song. Is that what they're using?
Oh, where they're walking down the street and stuff?
Yeah, there's like five or six different hit 90s songs.
Yeah, like, yeah, because there, as we talked about earlier, there's Fade by Stained, which is the one at the beginning. This is Elevation by U2, you're right. There's Fat Lip by Sum 41.
Yes.
And then a couple other songs in this episode are Bonecracker by Shorecore, who I've never heard of, or Shockcore, who I've never heard of before.
Yeah.
And Inflatable by Bush. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
I'd never heard that one outside of Smallville.
This is the 2000s CD was popped in the offices at Smallville writing team. And they're like, we got to use all of these in one episode.
Yeah, well, there was a lot of teenage trope in this episode, like the pickup basketball game, but we're almost there. We'll get to that pickup basketball game in a second.
Yeah, but anyway, Chloe's walking down
Main Street talking about whatever, and this shady guy who I don't expect to see in Smallville. Like, I expect to see him on the other side of 59 from Minute Maid Park. You know what I'm saying?
True.
Like,
but the Talent Theater's closed, so there's a lot of grifters
starting to attract
there.
The riffraff, right? Yeah. But this guy is just straight out of like stock casting of like, okay, we need a shady homeless looking guy. I mean, he looks like disheveled or whatever, and he just snatches Chloe's computer, and Eric has been chilling out, drinking some coffee, presumably from the beanery because the town's not open yet, right? Actually, Eric is eyeballing, I don't even remember the girl's name. It's the girl he has a crush on and her jock boyfriend. The blonde Lana and the brunette Whitney. We'll just call them that.
Right.
So he's been creepily looking at them, and he sees this go down. Eric sees that this perch snatching go down. So he stops the guy, and then the guy pulls out a knife to stab Eric, and Eric just holds his hand up, and the knife shatters, and he throws the guy 20 feet. And I had to say, man, he's had his powers for like 2 days. He's already learned the whole throw the guy 20 feet trick, right? So he gives Chloe back the computer or her computer or whatever. And the townspeople start coming around Eric and congratulating him. And and blonde Lana kind of flashes him a smile like, oh, see, sending mixed signals, girls. No. Look, Eric, just because the girl smiled at you doesn't mean she likes you now. All right, just important word of advice to all the guys out there. Okay, girls can smile at you and not like you. But the next day, we have Chloe and Peter bragging about the story. Like, oh, Clark, you should have been there, man. Eric, he ran up to this guy, and the knife shattered, and he gave it. And Clark's like, yeah, 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 big deal. Like, he's not very impressed. And then Eric runs up to them, and we see the newspaper headline. It's an article Chloe had written, and she calls him Superboy. He's like, hey, who came up with that? Chloe's like, I did. He's like, oh, I like it. And Clark has a funny line. He actually says, I actually thought that was pretty lame, which was pretty funny.
Now, I had a question for you about the Superboy thing, though.
Yeah.
Wasn't there a legal wrestling match that they had, I guess, Miles and Alfred Go?
Yeah, well, yeah. So the character Superboy was created in the 40s by Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster, the creators of Superman. I don't know if it was the Schusters or the Siegels, but their families have been notorious for suing DC Comics for rights of Superman. And there was some loophole there where, like, they thought they could get some money from the Superboy character, arguing that he was a separate character than Superman, even though he was clearly just Superman as a boy. So, yes, in the 2000s there was a lot of talk about how Superboy is, like, and it's an illegal, questionable thing. So, like, that's why the Superboy TV show didn't come out on DVD until, like, you know, 2006. The year of Superman! So, yeah, gotcha, okay. Yeah, they've always been trying to sue and stuff. And, look, I understand. Look, there was some bad practice going on in the comic industry. In fact, the entertainment industry, period, in the early 20th century. But I'm sorry, your, you know, grandfathers or great-grandfather, whoever it was, because obviously they passed away a long time ago now, but their family, their heirs, are the ones taking DC to court. And it's like, look, I'm sorry they signed this deal where they got $200 for the character of Superman, but, I mean, a deal is a deal, right? So yeah. It's like, it sucks, but that's just life, and I'm sorry this became a multi-million dollar character and all, but it's just the never-ending battle, literally, no pun intended, but the never-ending legal battle from these families has just been incessant forever, and now they finally came to a settlement on it. I believe I'm not sure which one it was, Joe Shuster or Jerry Siegel. I think it's Jerry Siegel, because now if you look at, instead of like Superman created by Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster,
yeah,
it says like Superman created by Joe Shuster with special something from the Jerry Siegel, special permission by the Jerry Siegel family.
Interesting.
It's a very convoluted credit, is what I'm trying to say. It's more convoluted than my explanation, even. So I'm just happy that Bill Finger is finally getting co-creator credit on Batman. Raises the finger, kidding. Right? Like that guy.
No kidding.
Bob Kane is a shrewd dude. Like, at least his dad was like a lawyer or something. And they really strong arm Bill Finger out of the rights. Like, if you guys should just go Google like Bob Kane's Batman and see what Bob Kane would have been, or what Batman would have been without Bill Finger's influence, is ridiculous. But for 75 years, it's been Batman created by Bob Kane and no one else.
And he finally got his credit with Batman versus Superman.
Yeah, right? That, and then they're starting in the comics and everything moving forward here. It says Batman created by Bob Kane with Bill Finger, which is still not because
it doesn't do it justice.
Arguably, Bill Finger. Well, not arguably. Like Bill Finger, all the elements you think about Batman, Bill Finger created, or even Jerry Robinson, who created the Joker. Those guys had more of a hand in it than Bob Kane did. But Bob Kane came from a like well-off family. His dad was a lawyer. He knew what to do legal-wise. So. He got all the credit for 75 years, but so yeah, Superboy, right?
So I'm sorry, I set you off on a tangent.
No, that's good. Anyway. That's good. These are the nuggets of trivia that you'll only find here on Always Hold on Smallville and across the internet. But
there you go.
If you care to look, but yeah, you know, I like for a Superman reference. I thought that was pretty clever. Obviously, they're never going to use the term Superboy at any point, or at least they weren't. You know, Superboy does show up in season 10 of Smallville, but they weren't thinking that far ahead. Or at least a form of him. I don't believe they ever call him Superboy. But the point is, this is a good Superman reference. This is a Superman reference done well. So Clark goes home to talk to the Kents about this, and they're reading the newspaper and trying to just deduce what happened. And they kind of figure out, well, maybe it was the lightning, and he was holding a meteor rock. And, you know, it's some questionable science, but it's Smallville, right? You're used to it. You know, Clark starts to have some self-doubt here. He's like, man, all those years of hiding, you know, what good did it do? Because everybody loves Eric, you know. And Jonathan's, you know, always the level-headed one. He's like, you know, for now, that might not last, you know. This scene is another, just one of the other many scenes in this episode that it examines, like, who Clark is without his powers. Because he's been defined by his powers his whole life. You know, he is his powers, you know. But Jonathan tells him, look, you're more than just that. You're Clark Kent, you know. So I think that's a good thing to remember, because people always complain about Superman, how he's so superpowered and unrelatable and all that stuff. But it's not that he has the powers. It's how he chooses to use them or not use them, right? And that's what makes him such a great character, which people, I think, overlook all the time.
But, no, I think and the why, too. The why is important for why, you know, who is this character and why is he choosing to – he could do anything with these. He could rule the world with an iron, you know, fist, but he chooses to – help and live a modest life, and I think that this kind of highlights that.
Yeah, you know, speaking of my Jerry Siegel and Superman created by Joe Siegel, my Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster tangent just a couple minutes ago, actually their first story about Superman was called Reign of the Superman, and it's about a normal guy who got powers after like a meteor shower or something, and he uses powers for evil. So that was actually the first iteration of their Superman character. So it's interesting that, that was the first place their mind went with the character as well before they re-engineered him as a superhero. So we finally get to the pickup basketball scene we were talking about. Whitney and Brunette Whitney come up to Clark and Pete and say, hey, we're getting a pickup game together. You guys want to play? And Pete's like, oh, Clark doesn't play. He's like, oh, I play. He's like, oh, I play. So they go to the gym and they have this talk about high school, right? This is the most ridiculous high school scene I think I've seen in the series yet. It's like they're playing pickup basketball in the like gym. There's like slow motion shots of the basketball going in the hoop, you know. you know, Whitney kind of blocks Clark and he kind of falls and skins his knee. But you can tell Clark's enjoying it because he doesn't have to hold back for a change. So I think it's an important scene, but it just felt so cheesy in high school to me. And they're wearing blue jeans. Did you notice this? Like,
I didn't notice that. Actually.
Like,
I
who the hell plays basketball in blue jeans? Like, dude, like, and you know, I had thought this was after school. Like, they were just, you know, hanging out at the school after school. I guess as people do. I don't know. In a small town, I guess there's nowhere else to go. But they finish okay, and they lose the game, and then Whitney goes up to them and he's like, "Hey, we play every Tuesday and Thursday at lunch." And you're like, What? You guys play basketball at lunch?
In their jeans.
In your jeans? Like, lunch in high school is only 30 minutes, man. Like, you got to eat at some point. What are you doing playing basketball? But
Clark was happy to lose.
Yeah, Pete's asked him, like, what are you so happy about? We lost. He's like, yeah, it's pretty cool, huh?
Yeah, so it's reminds me of the Houston Rockets this year.
Oh, man. Houston sports has really gone downhill in the last year. I don't know what's happened. But you guys don't care about that.
No, I'm sorry.
You don't need to be the one apologizing, Krause. The Houston sports franchises are. So this was an important scene for that point, though, to see Clark. He's starting to enjoy being normal, although it was just really, really cheesy, I thought.
Yeah.
So then if everybody remembers Victoria Hardwick, Lex's girlfriend from a few episodes now, that plot line has now been awkwardly inserted into this episode. Like, I like all these plots, but, like, I'm like, oh, okay, I guess this is happening now. Like, Lex is waiting in, you know, Metropolis, presumably somewhere, on her and her father, and they come in, and Lex kind of takes an attitude with him, and he's like, I've been waiting for 45 minutes, and her dad is just like the most over-the-top English guy ever. He's like, hey, come on, girl. Hello, Lex. It's like, yeah, we get it. They're British or whatever, right? Basically, you know, there have been hints of Cadmus Labs in a couple episodes ago, something Lex was researching and something Victoria was spying on him about on his computer. And apparently this is all a little confusing to me, but, I mean, I've been watching all the episodes, so it shouldn't be, but...
No, this part did confuse me.
There's a twist later, but as this scene presents it, Lex had been researching Cadmus Labs, and Victoria spied on him and got that research. So her and her father have bought Cadmus Labs, and because Cadmus Labs are going to come out with these awesome things, apparently, they're going to be able to make enough money off that to buy Luther Corp? Like, that was my understanding of Victoria and her dad's plan.
Did they just buy out Cadmus because Lex had, like, his browser open? And
yeah, it's like, oh, Lex thinks this is pretty hot stuff. It must be. Let's buy it right now.
Was that the only prerequisite that they needed to have for them to buy Cadmus?
It's like, you went through all that, you know, Victoria was living with Lex for who knows how long and all that stuff. And then, you know, Lex's plan, Lex thought the plan was going to be released as he had presented it to Victoria, like, oh, Victoria and I are going to play our fathers against each other and take over both our companies or something. So that's where things stand right now. So in this scene here, it looks like Lex has been screwed over by these guys. So he's in a vulnerable spot again. But we'll get back to that plot line in another scene later. put that on pause and we'll get back to the episode at hand here. So we go to the Talon Theater, and this is actually the first time we've seen the inside of it because we've only seen... Because thinking back on it, I was very confused. I thought Nell's Flower Shop was the old theater that they turned into the coffee shop. But apparently it was just next door. And this, like we had saying, like the theater has been showing the Lost Boys or whatever for the last few months. Solana's there kind of like, you know, hanging out, reminiscing. I guess Nell owns the property because they have a key. I don't know.
Yeah.
Clark comes by. And he's talking to Lana, and she's talking about we find out why the Talon itself is so important to her, and it's because her parents met there. When her mom went to go see Close Encounters of the Third Kind, she walked out because she was bored, and they're both like, "How can you get bored during Close Encounters?" So I like that. Although I will say it can be a little boring. Out of all the movies of the set, like thinking you got Jaws, you got Star Wars, you got Superman, like. Close Encounters.
E.T.
Yeah. Close Encounters is by far the most boring of all those 70s and early 80s blockbusters.
Yeah. No, I totally agree with the parents on that one.
So, yeah, and her dad was working the concession stands, and, you know, it was the 70s, right? Free love and all that. So they really connected, and it was happily ever after from there. You know, they have a pretty good – it's a pretty good Clark and Lana scene here because he'd come over – well, I really liked how she says – how'd you find me here, by the way? Because that's a question that no one would even ask in later seasons. Like, people would just show up.
Oh, he's here again.
Yeah, no explanation of why he's here, why he found you, but he came over with a purpose. He says, oh, Nell told me you were here. I was hoping to borrow your English notes. I kind of fell asleep in class, which is very un-Clark Kent-like, which, you know, Lana actually recognizes. She says, you know, there's something different about you. You don't have the weight of the world on your shoulders, you know, which is, you know, a very true statement. So it's actually pretty perceptive of her. So they share a nice little moment there. And he has a good line. He says, sometimes letting go is the only way to move forward. So Clark's talking about himself, obviously, but he's also trying to talk about Lana, about the talent and how they're going to lose the whole property and, you know, don't hold on to the past and things like that. You know, as we talk through the plot here, I'm starting to realize how segmented this episode is.
Yeah,
there's a lot of scenes.
Like Batman versus Superman.
Where is the 3.5-hour rated R cut of this episode? I want to see that. Eric goes home and he's all happy. He's like, hey, Mom, Dad, I made the paper. Aren't you proud? He kind of hugs his mom, and his mom's like really standoffish. You can tell his parents are like intimidated and scared by him.
Yes.
And his dad tells him, yes, once you get a clean bill of health, we're going to take you to the Metropolis. I have a colleague that would like to meet you. He's like, you mean study me? And he gets all mad, and he like kind of holds his dad up against the wall. And he's like, look, I can do anything I want. I can go anywhere I want. You guys can't tell me what to do anymore. And he runs out. And this kind of shows how special it was for the Kents to be the ones to find Clark. Because, you know, a lot of people are not the Kents. Everyone is not the Kents. Like, everyone's not going to be accepting of, like, this, first of all, this alien baby, right? But who has, like, these powers and stuff like that. You know, there's a scene where Clark and Jonathan are talking later. And he asks him, look, hey, were you ever scared of me? And Jonathan says, no. I mean, you had some tantrums and put some holes in the wall. But you were a good kid, Clark. And, you know, that's good stuff to think about. Because I think that's a big part that
they had love. Yeah, loving parents make a big difference.
Yeah, it's the whole nature versus nurture thing again, which is a core of this show when you have a character like Clark and a character like Lex. And it doesn't really try to answer the question, which is good because there's not really a real answer to that question, I think. Or you should not presume to answer it on a CW television show.
Yeah.
But I'm glad they at least explore the question.
Well, but I thought that scene with Eric at his house, I mean, was eerily similar to the one in X-Men – X-Men United, X2, the family corners him, is like, hey, you know, you're not normal, and the cops show up.
Yeah, and they actually start using some Dutch angles, which is when they shoot something off, like, off kilter, where it's, like, diagonally. This
right.
You see this in, like, you know, the Batman 66 TV show, where we're talking about the villains, but that's a really cool technique by director Greg Beeman, because it shows you, like, something's off about this whole situation. It just adds to the uncomfortableness of the whole thing. And that's a good call on the X2 thing. And, you know, X2 came out after this, so it clearly ripped off this episode. They were like, what has Sean been up to? Let's watch that Smallville episode. Oh, I have a great idea for a scene in X2. And, you know, I think you and I talked about this last time because because that's where the dad was. So, you know, the whole family, I'm going to say it again, just for the sake of the listeners. The whole family in X2, the whole Drake family, they've all been Smallville guest stars.
Right.
The dad was one of the guys that the serial killer killed in Hourglass. Obviously, Iceman is in this episode. And then Maggie Sawyer, who shows up in season 3 and beyond. Or actually, she shows up in season 2 and 3 and just makes other appearances throughout Smallville as Metropolis cop Maggie Sawyer. She's the mom of the Drake family. And then the younger brother is in an episode, basically the episode based off John Q, where the brother takes the hospital hostage. A younger brother takes the hospital hostage to save his older brother. So all those people, all those guys, Canadian actors, right? Hardworking Canadian actors getting work. So good for them. So Eric has left in this rage, you know, and he goes to school and he has this absurd boombox. And, like, were boomboxes even a thing in the early 2000s? Like, I thought we had phased those out.
Yeah, I think they went out around 96.
Yeah. And not only that, he has his standard issue I'm evil now black leather coat, which seems to be what people in Smallville get when they turn evil. Bug Boy got this in Metamorphosis. And then Lex wears this exact coat when he gets possessed by Zod in season 6, like this long black leather coat, you know. He shows up to school and people are just, you know, hanging out outside Smallville High, as they do. And he goes up to blonde Lana and brunette Whitney, and he puts his boombox down on the table, you know, and asks what's her name out on a date. And brunette Whitney's like, hey, what's your problem, man? Can't ask my girlfriend out on a date. And he has a point. like what did Eric think was gonna happen here? Right? I mean, she's in a relationship with this guy. Just because he has superpowers now doesn't mean he can just show up and just because he has – you know what I'm saying? Like, what did he expect was going to happen?
Well, I can kind of understand the ego. And I think he wants an excuse to just let loose.
That's a good point. Yeah, because he's pretty fed up with his parents. You know, because, I mean, his home is – he has an unhealthy home life.
Yeah. Which makes me feel really bad for him.
Exactly.
Right.
His dad is beating him. Like, you know.
Yeah.
And now his dad wants to take him off to Metropolis to have him dissected and tested and all that.
Well, yeah, what else is he supposed supposed to do? He's going to go try to get lucky with someone else's girlfriend.
Yeah, the brunette Whitney, he starts saying, you're still nothing, Summers. And he's like, oh, nothing? Why are you hiding from nothing? I thought that was pretty funny because he starts running away from him. He, like, runs under a car. And I thought the car special effects here are really good when Eric, like, punches through a rearview mirror and he flips a car over. I mean, this is all practical effects, so there's no CGI cars in sight. So I was very happy to see no CGI there. So Clark comes out of the school because, you know, as it always happens, there's a fight at school. Everybody starts coming out, circling around, seeing what's going on. So Clark sees what's going on here with Eric, and Clark tries to stop him. He's like, Eric, listen, you need to calm down. You could hurt people. It's serious. He's like, get out of my way, Clark. And he throws him 20 feet. How does it feel, Clark? How does it feel to be on the opposite end of being thrown 20 feet, right, into another car? He gets knocked out. He's bleeding, you know. Eric really, you know, not that he's, like, beating him up, but he's just throwing him around, brunette Whitney, and throws him, like, a picnic table finally. He's about to go, like, finish him off or something probably, but then blonde Lana comes up and says, leave us alone, you freak, and that, you know, shakes up Eric, and he runs off. And I think that's the end of blonde Lana and brunette Whitney in this episode, so.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Whose names we will never know. I mean, they say them in the episode, but I just don't remember. So then we have our second hospital visit, and this time it's Clark, an unexpected guest at the hospital. The doctor's like, oh, we could try some x-rays. And the kid's like, no, we'll just take him home, thank you. But they say there's no broken bones. How would they know if they didn't do any x-rays, right?
True.
I guess the kid's concern is, oh, he's an alien, that his organs and skeletal structure might be different, so we don't want them taking any x-rays. So I thought that was cool how they understood, like, okay, that's dangerous. We need to not be taking x-rays.
Or Papa Kent's just in a rush to get Clark back home to do more labor, so he can sit down on the couch and drink lemonade.
He's like, bottom line, Doc, how long can he be back at work on the farm? The cows aren't going to feed themselves. The doctor does say, okay, I want you back here in a week for a checkup. Do you think Clark goes back for that checkup? He probably doesn't. So then Lex shows up. I guess he had heard about, you know, this altercation or something. And this is my favorite lines of the show. Like, I remember when I first saw this, I laughed out loud at this. It was so funny. So Lex asks Clark, how you feeling? And Clark says, oh, I'm feeling great. How about we go out in the parking lot? You can hit me with your car. That was so good. I love when Clark can, you know, be a little sarcastic, have a little humor to him.
Yeah.
So obviously seeing all this, Lex is like, okay, well, Nixon's report is BS. I mean, this guy's in the hospital here. I mean, that can't be what have happened. So this, you know, gets Lex off the Clark Kent trail. So a contrived series of events, but well played, because obviously, like, it was getting to a point where Lex was gonna have to confront Clark about this at some point, because there's all this mysterious stuff going on, the car accident, so this worked to the advantage of the show. I feel like you can get away with this once or twice, right?
Yeah,
but the show does it about 10 times more than that.
this it worked perfectly in this episode. Mm-hmm. It's just later when they continue to do the same thing over and over again.
How did you do that? Oh, I don't know. Oh, okay. So they kind of patch things up, and we cut back to Eric, and he's gone back home now, because he's in over his head. You know, Eric is like, he did not expect to cause all this damage, and he's just kind of, you know, getting carried away with his powers, and he's gone back to his parents for help. You know, he's like, look, I there was an accident. I didn't mean to hurt anyone, and his parents are kind of done with him at this point. And his dad, like, he holds like a golf club out to him, like that's gonna do anything.
Yeah.
And he tells him, like, I always told you, Eric, there'd be a day when you had to live up to your, or, you know, take responsibility for your actions, and that day has come. And the cops start showing up, and he's like, what, you call the cops? He's like, I need your help. You're my parent. You're supposed to protect me. And that's the huge comparison point there between this guy's situation and Clark's situation. Like, the, you know, and it can't, I mean, the dad's an abusive dad. They should not have gone that far, I think.
Yeah.
Because it kind of taints the whole episode. You know, you look at it through that lens, but I'm not going to say these guys are necessarily bad parents.
I am. I'm going to say that.
I don't know. I mean, they're dealing with a crazy situation, but they probably could have handled it better. I mean, the dad is a jerk. I don't know. Not everybody's the Kents, right? I mean, are they that evil for calling the cops on their son who's gotten out of control and is flipping cars over and attacking people? You know what I mean?
No. But trying to beat him earlier in the episode before he had established.
Yeah, that's true. I keep coming back to that. Like, I can't believe they're like.
His first reaction was he's going to, you know, bitch slap him.
Right. I mean, I do not at all think the writers or creators were like, trying to put this guy on as like a domestic violence at home, but
yeah.
We're gonna do it for him. Like, look, when you have a dad that's gonna slap his son in the face when he from behind, right?
From behind, yeah, not even see it coming.
that paints things in a certain way I don't think they wanted.
Yeah.
And this is where you get the whole X2 thing you were talking about, like where the cops show up and you know.
Oh,
the,
that's right. I got it mixed up.
You're yeah, right. This is where you really get that feel of like, oh, here come the cops, you know. And, sir, put down the knives. I can't. So word of all this gets back to the Kents, and you know this Eric's on a rampage, and nobody can find him. And Clark says, "I have to stop him." And Jonathan says, "Look, in your condition, if you take him on again, he might kill you." And Clark says, "Look, this is who I am, whether I have my powers or not." And that's what's awesome about this episode. That's why I love this episode so much, is it really examines who Clark Kent is, and he's not just the superpowers. Like, if he had it or not, he would still be going out there trying to do the right thing, even a great risk to himself, you know? I mean, that's the thing about Superman. People complain about, oh, well, nothing can hurt him, you know? Like Batman, you aren't brave, men are brave, you know?
Yeah.
And there is a certain point to that, because Superman never really has to fear anything other than, like, kryptonite or magic. So they try to figure out, okay, well, what can I do to stop him? Clark says, well, if he has all my powers, maybe he has my weaknesses, too. And Martha says, it's not like we just keep meteor rocks laying around, which is, like, such an absurd statement for this show. First of all, there's meteor rocks everywhere. Like,
yeah. You
know about 50 places you can go in this town. You can go to the Crater Lake. You can go to the old retirement home, right? You can go to the greenhouse, right? There's so many places. The old treehouse mill, you know, in the second
half. Yeah.
It's everywhere. And then in later seasons, they do keep kryptonite lying around. Like, they keep it in the barn, like in a lead box, you know, just in case, I guess, Clark goes out of control or something. But they always have it. So it's funny to hear Martha, of all people, say, so I think we just keep meteor. Where are you going to find one of those?
Yeah. And then what the whole season's based on is this everywhere.
Clark's like, I know where I can find one. And like, oh, we know it's going to be Lana's necklace. That's why it's back in this episode. But we got to go back to the Lex plot, right? Lex has gone back to Metropolis to talk to the Hardwicks. And the Hardwicks are not happy. And it's funny, Lex knows that he's in control in the situation. I love when Lex knows he's got the upper hand on people. He just has this smugness about him, and it's so fun to see him like this, because he strolls back into that office he was in earlier, and the Hardwicks are there, and they basically explain Cadmus Labs was a setup. It was nothing. It was worthless. And Victoria's like, oh, but I saw it on his computer.
Yeah.
Lex is like, oh, you know, that piece of fiction that I wrote up? And through some... You know, these are just bad business practices, because apparently they invested in this company they had done no true research in, just, I guess, to beat Lex to the jump, I guess?
Yeah, I just don't get it. I just don't. They never really explain why they bought it, other than they found him researching it,
Yeah, it's like, oh, man, we can use this money and buy LuthorCorp when they finally came out with something in 10 years. Sir Harry, Victoria's dad, kind of storms out. And Victoria, you know, she has a final line to Lex. She's like, Lex, it was just business. And he says... You call sleeping with me business? I hate to think what that makes you. Which is a great line. It's so good. And she slaps him. And she's like, we could have been great together. And he says, I plan on being great all by myself. Which is such a great, awesome Lex Luthor line, right?
And just not to continue to beat on Batman versus Superman. But see, that to me is Lex Luthor. That line is how I picture
he's
Lex Luthor.
Cool, collected, in control, a savvy business guy, even though these business moves are questionable by everyone. I'm not really sure. Yeah, because now, apparently, Lex tells him, my father and I will be making an offer on your company in the morning. Like now, Luthor Corp is going to take over the Hardwick Company or whatever. So it's like, man, you guys are rolling the dice here with all your crazy business moves. But yeah, absolutely. And, you know, this episode, and pretty much every episode of Smallville, shows why Michael Rosenbaum is the best Lex Luthor.
I agree. Definitely.
So Clark goes back to the main plot line now. Clark goes to the Talon because Lana is still there. I guess she's going to spend all her time there now that it's closing. She's like taking posters off the wall, doing whatever. And they have a pretty good conversation here, the details of which are not important. But bottom line, Clark asks her, he's like, look, this is going to sound strange, but can I borrow your necklace? And she's like, sure. You know, Clark, in his mind, he thinks he might be going off to die at this point. He says, whatever happens, I'll make sure this gets back to you. And he kind of gives her a kiss on the cheek, you know. I'm like, oh, that's a nice moment. Because he doesn't know. Like, he might go off and get killed by Eric. He doesn't know. So that's a good scene. he goes to Eric's house. It's been completely trashed. You know, there's like cop car on the roof, there's a cop car in the front lawn, you know, and smart on
Wolverine's in the bushes.
The X-Jet's flying overhead. Quite a talent you have there. And, you know, they save money by not showing the actual, you know, Eric versus the cops, just showing the aftermath. And to that point, Miles Miller said this about Leech. He says, "It was the last big episode for the first season. The studio had been very generous with us for the first 12 episodes, but when we started the back nine, they really came down on us."
Huh.
But for Leech, we had lots of money to spend, and I think the visual effects are fantastic.
And, I agree.
And that's how it works. You know, when you hear about, like, the back nine of episodes that are renewed. Most TV series these days, they're 22 episodes. So, like, the initial order is usually 13. So that's why you have all these shows that, you know, don't last past 13 episodes. It's because they didn't get the back nine ordered. And, you know, they're putting their best foot forward with Smallville. I'm sure the budgets were crazy. They were spending a lot more money than they should have. But, you know, they were establishing the world, the brand. So, and I really appreciate that. And you can tell in these early episodes, you see Clark use his powers all the time. You see running, you see bullets, you see X-ray vision. Later on in shows, they kind of cut back on that. Like, well, even in this episode, like at the very beginning, you hear Clark uses X-ray vision, but you don't see it, you know, like just saving a little money there. But on the whole, yeah, I would agree with him. I think these occasional dodgy CGI aside, I think the special effects really hold up here. So, you know, Clark talks to Eric's dad quickly, and he says something. He asks him, like, "Do you have any idea where you went?" And Eric's dad says, he says something about getting rid of it, and there's only one place he could do that, whatever that meant, and he walks off. And Clark figures out, okay, he's probably back at the dam where it all happened.
And sure enough, he was.
Yes, he's standing on top of the dam, and you're not sure what he's going to do. Like, is he going to jump off? Or I thought it would have been really awesome if he jumped off and he started flying, right? Damn it.
End of series right there.
Yeah, I mean, like, and I'm glad he did it, right? Because he's equivalent to what Clark's powers are now. That's a huge problem later on in Smallville where, you know, other Kryptonians show up, or, you know, Bizarro, or anyone else can fly except for Clark. That's a huge problem. Like Supergirl, Bizarro, all the Kryptonians, but Martian Manhunter. That's just everybody can fly. Hawkman, everyone can fly but Clark. So Clark runs down to the bottom of the dam because, you know, Eric had jumped off, and this is next to, you know, the Smallville power plant or something like that. Clark asks him why he jumped. He's like, "To test my limits. You know, apparently nothing can stop me." Clark, you know, he's still trying to reason with him. You know, I mean, he has the kryptonite in the box that Lex gave him, which is smart because he knows, like, if everything goes according to plan, he'll get his powers back and the kryptonite will weaken him. So he needs to have that protective shield. So that's some good forward thinking on Clark's part. I like it when Clark has to use his brain, because so often Superman just uses his brawn and not his brain, right? So a good forward thinking on his part. But he's trying to talk Eric down. He's like, "Look, you know, these powers, you know, we can control them. I can help you." And Eric kind of grabs, he starts getting mad. He's like, "Look, Clark, if you had the power to do anything, what would you do?" And he says, "I would stop people like you." And right there, like, I got chills with that line, man. Like, that is Superman. Like, that's like a stand-up. Like, yeah, Clark Kent, you know what I mean? Like, that is what Superman is all about. It's true. If he had the power to do anything, that's what he would do. He would go out there and do the right thing just because that is who he is and that's what he does. And that's what separates him from so many other heroes who were defined by, like, you know, some tragedy that happened to him or whatnot. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So we have a 1-2 punch here of, like, awesome dialogue like that and then really lame dialogue. Because he's like, "Nothing on this earth can stop me." And Clark says, "You're wrong." And I'm like, you know, he sets you up for such a better comeback than that, right? He's like, he could have said, like, "You're right," because kryptonite's not from this earth, right? It's a meteorite.
Yeah,
so that would
have
been a good comeback. I don't know. It reminded me what I thought I was in The Dark Knight Rises, or Bane's like, "Oh, so you came back to die with your city." And Batman's like, "No, I came back to stop you." That's so lame. Come on, David Goyer, Chris Nolan. But it's like, oh, it was kind of a 1-2 punch of good, bad here at the end of the dialogue. You know, and I guess, what, is Eric going to electrocute Clark? Is that why he starts taking the power lines apart?
I guess so, yeah.
Yeah, because he never really – I was waiting for Clark to pull out the kryptonite for him to get weak and that just to be it. But, I mean, I guess Clark's lucky he took the electricity.
It worked.
Well, I'm thinking, like, if Eric had not taken the power line off, Clark could have weakened him. But Clark didn't have the strength to, like, get electrocuted by ripping apart the power line, right?
So, true.
I mean, another contrivance there. You know, the more I talk about this episode, the more I'm questioning the rating I gave it. But that's okay. It's okay.
Well, I'm actually, my rating's going higher.
Okay.
I had it kind of low, so maybe we balance each other out.
you know, he reaches over to Clark, you know, Eric reaches over to Clark with the power line, and then Clark grabs his hand with the kryptonite in it, and we see the same, like, power transference energy happen here that happened at the beginning of the episode, and they both collapse, and we see Clark had this, like, you know, cut on his forehead from when Eric threw him earlier, and that goes away. It's like, okay, Clark's got his powers back, and Eric's kind of, curled up on the ground. It's like, oh, it's so cold. I'm like, so cold? You're wearing, like, a leather jacket, man. Man up. But I guess they wanted to show that, you know, he didn't have his powers anymore. So the cops show up. They cart Eric off. Clark and Jonathan have a good last moment. Clark kind of feels responsible for what's happened, you know, because it's his powers. And as he said earlier, he's like, even though I don't still have my powers, I still feel responsible for them, you know. And Jonathan tells him, look, they had problems long before he had your abilities. So, and they have a really good line here between the two of them. Jonathan says, seeing how destructive Eric got, it just reminds me of how special you really are. And then Clark says, that's because Eric didn't get my two strongest gifts, you and Mom. It's like, oh, that's great.
Aww.
I remember my mom watched this episode of Smallville. Like, they used to show repeats, like, on Sundays or whatever. And she started randomly watching Smallville. And this is, like, the first episode she watched. And she was like, that's a really good show. Like, she saw why I liked it, you know? And then the next week was the episode with Whitney and the Kryptonite tattoos. And she was like, yeah, that's not as good.
No, not good of a show.
So, to my knowledge, that might have been the only two episodes she watched. But I'm sure that this heavy emphasis on, like, family and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Okay, and then Smallville was truly a family show back in the day, you know? Everybody, the parents played an important role, and all the family dynamics were great. And talking about family dynamics, we get our last Lex scene here.
Oh, yeah.
Lex is talking to Roger Nixon, and he tells him, look, I saw with my own eyes the Clark Kent. He's nothing special about him. Drop it. And he's like, oh, there's a story there, Lex. He's like, there may be, but you're going to leave it alone. The Kents are off limits. He's like, all right. Well, here's some pictures of Victoria and your dad doing it.
TMZ started right there.
Yeah. And Lex is like, who initiated this little encounter? Victoria? And Roger's like, no, your father. It's like,
dun, dun, dun.
And he had just been on the phone with Lionel earlier, too. A little voice cameo from John Glover talking about Lex's business dealings of the day. Yeah, that's pretty twisted, huh? But anyway, our last scene in the episode is Clark goes back to the town. Of course, Lana is still there. I guess this is the same night. So he comes back with her necklace, and he gives her the lead box. And, you know, very smooth on Clark's part, giving her this necklace back in this box. And he's like, oh, it's a lead armor. To preserve your memories. Like, no, it's lead so you don't get sick from kryptonite. Let's call it what it is. But he plays it off really well. And she's like, oh, is that your way of telling me I shouldn't wear my necklace anymore? And he says, I just don't want it to hold you back. I'm like, man, Clark, he is just smooth-talking his way out for wearing this necklace. So, you know, she keeps it in the box. And to my knowledge, I don't think she wears this thing again until season 2. And the episode where Tina Gear comes back, the shapeshifter, and Visage.
Okay. But she wears it very sparingly after this, right?
I honestly don't know. I don't think she wears it again up until that episode, because I feel like this is their way of literally, you know, closing the door on that necklace, because they figured, man, maybe people are going to – maybe – I don't know. At the time, were people complaining? I don't know. But they set up this whole thing, oh, Clark can't go near Lana because of this kryptonite necklace. And it's a great idea, but if you have to start, you know, doing that in every episode – or not doing an episode. Point being, I don't think she wears it again until Visage in season 2, but we'll find out. And she does make a comment, you know, he's got that weight of the world back on his shoulders, which is true. And she's going to go help Whitney, like, at the store or whatever, because that's a new thing. Apparently Whitney's family has a store, and he's always having to help out with that, you know. It's a cool shot that kind of pans up to the Talon sign. It says, closed, thanks for the memories. I have no idea if that has any, like, thematic or symbolic tie-in to this episode, but I liked it.
Yeah, did they choose that because they weren't sure if they were going to get picked up? Or is that me reading too much into it?
Yeah, you know, if Small got canceled, this actually would be a pretty good series finale, now that I think about it. Man, our podcast would be a lot shorter. That's interesting. I never really made that connection, but from the Miles Miller quote talking about how this was in the first batch, that would have been very interesting. Food for thought.
Look, you can adjust to these abilities. You got to give yourself some time.
How do you know, Clark?
I'm just saying you got to give yourself some time.
Oh, so in time, My parents won't be scared of me. The girl of my dreams won't think I'm a freak. The cops won't be after me.
I can help.
I don't want your help, Clark. If they're gonna treat me like a criminal, then I'll give them something to be scared about.
It's not the answer.
Come on, Clark. If you had the power to do whatever you want, what would you do?
I'd stop people like you.
Leach got an 8.4 out of 10 on IMDb, and Neil Bailey from the Superman homepage was not the biggest fan of this episode. He gave it 3.5 out of 5 stars, which I thought was a pretty low rating for this episode, because I love this episode. And just to give you an example of what he's talking about, he didn't really like the way things played out with somebody else getting Clark's powers. Like, he made a couple of different suggestions on how it could have been done.
Yeah.
He says, "My immediate suggestion? Same plot, except the poor kid turned homicidal maniac gets the powers because his kryptonite-inspired power is to assume the DNA or some functions of whatever he touches and consciously assumes. That way, Clark could have lost his powers. Then, when the villain's temporary assumption of the Kryptonian DNA wears off, Clark could set right what his powers run amok had wronged." So that's Parasite. that's what that is, you know, and I don't think you're ready for that. So I don't really mind. I don't really mind that. I don't know. Like, he had some issues with the whole power transference and stuff. But look, you gotta look past that. I like there was a catalyst, and in this universe, they've established: look, kryptonite plus electricity plus human plus Kryptonian equals transference of powers, and that's just the way it works in this iteration of Superman. So yeah. So Krauss, what did you think of this episode? What would you give it rating wise?
I liked it. I'd give it a B. I definitely agree that the transference of the powers relied on some pretty heavy conveniences as far as the writing. But man, what a soundtrack. We get Stained, U2, Sum 41. We get some great moments of Clark showing, you know, his humanity and family. And so I really liked it. I'd give it a solid B.
I'm going to give this episode an A, because it really is one of my favorite episodes of the entire series. But yeah, I mean, it's not quite A-plus territory, because as we were talking through the synopsis, as I commented earlier, like, it does feel kind of segmented. Like, okay, here's this Lex plot, and here's this plot over here, and there's that plot over there. But it is odd they decided to wrap up the Victoria plot line in this episode. Like, couldn't it have waited? Like, the next episode would have been better, because they could have used something like that to elevate it, because the next episode is pretty bad. I mentioned, the Kryptonite tattoos and the Whitney focused episode. And maybe that's another reason I like this one so much, because I saw that one next. I was like, oh man, this is garbage. The last episode was awesome compared to this. But this is just a really good examination, as I said several times now, of like who Clark Kent is, and that Superman is not just his powers.
And Lex too, but you're right. It's not just Clark's, not just his superpowers. It's about his family.
And you know, even though the Lex plot is a little shoehorned in here, I did like it a lot. Businessman Lex, man.
Yeah, instead of Riddler Lex from Batman vs. Superman. Lex.
Why are so many villains now based off the Riddler? We had Guy Pearce in Iron Man 3, right? He was Edward Nygma from Batman Forever. Of course, you had Electro in Amazing Spider-Man 2. Oh, he was Edward Nygma from Batman Forever. And now now we have Lex Luthor in Batman v Superman, Edward Nygma from Batman Forever. Like, there are other there are much better villains to base things off of. But yeah, so many quotable lines too from Lex in this episode, but there's so many quotable lines from Lex in every episode, right?
Yeah, that's true.
And the Superman references were good. I think the Superboy thing was fine. They didn't push that too much. I think Lana says something about, because Clark and Lana are talking about Eric waking up with powers one day, and she's like, "Oh, I always would want to fly," or whatever, you know, something like that. So that's a Superman reference. But I think if I had to show someone an episode of Smallville, like, this would be one of the first episodes I'd show them. Like, if I had to give someone a list of 5 episodes to watch, this would be on that list.
To be up there.
Yeah, because I think all the characters are very well represented here, and it really gets down to the crux or the meat or whatever terminology you should use, but for who Clark Kent really is. And it's his show, right? The show is called Smallville, but it's Clark Kent's journey. And this is an important step on his journey, because now I think this is gives him a good perspective on how the other half lives, so to speak. And might give him some more empathy, you know, towards, like, you know, what humans go through. Like, he was talking to his dad, like, man, how do you find the strength to do this every day? You know, I mean, it's when you walk a mile in another man's shoes, right? And that's what Clark has done in this episode. And I think that's a great experience for him, to inform him moving forward as Superman. So we have some business to attend to, our Smallville tally board. As we discussed, this actually passed the Bechdel test. So good on you, Smallville.
Ding!
We have another hospital visit, so that's two total.
Ding!
And then we have, I got to think of what to call this category. I guess Clark loses his powers. I mean, I guess that's what I'll call it.
Yeah. You know? I'm.
Now this is Clark truly losing his powers now. This is not like, he's around kryptonite and he's weak or something. This is like, you know, red solar rays or magic or whatever, right? This is Clark becomes powerless, you know? So that's what this category is for. So this is instance number one of Clark.
It'll be interesting to see how high that gets by the end of this podcast.
Yeah, it's not going to be crazy high, but I do know it happens on occasion.
at least once a season, right?
Once a season? I don't know. Maybe once every other season.
Okay.
I mean, because there are instances where he doesn't have powers, and I'm not sure. I guess it's going to be a case-by-case basis. Like when he's like in like virtual reality or like in someone else's mind, like he doesn't have his powers, but that doesn't really count. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's hard to say, but I know it happens at least. I don't know. Well, that's what this tally board is for.
We'll see.
So we'll see.
Stay tuned.
Well, cool, Kraus. Thanks for taking the time and talking Leech with me this
Thank
week.
Thank you for having me.
If people want to find you on the internet, where can they find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Papakin, PAPAKIN.
Making hateful remarks about the DC Cinematic Universe.
Yes. It's a polite way of putting it.
As for me, you can find me personally at MoronZach. That's MoreonZach. And for the podcast itself, you can find us at AlwaysMallville with one S on Twitter. Look us up on Facebook at AlwaysHoldOnToSmallville. Or send us an email at AlwaysMallville@gmail.com. Love hearing from you guys. It's been awesome. You know, the fan base is growing. People are talking, a lot of chatter and activity on the Facebook group, so that's always fun to see. I guess I just need to keep posting stories about Arrow. that seems to generate the most attention. Have you watched Arrow, Kraus?
I have watched three seasons so far. I'm a little behind.
Okay, so I didn't realize you'd watch that much of the show. So you haven't watched season four?
I have not caught up to season four. I've been told to slow down a little bit.
What did you think about season three compared to the first two?
I liked season three. I definitely thought season two was my favorite personally.
Yeah, season two is the best, I'd say. Season three, the first half was fine.
Yeah, yeah.
But then they really, it really got out of control.
Yeah, got a little out of hand.
Yeah, it's tough because I think certain parts of season four are better than season three. But then there are other parts of season four that are way worse than season three, and it's really hard to say which one is worse, which is a terrible thing to say about a TV show. Like, I can't decide which season is worse. But anyway, yeah, I mean, you should definitely, if you've gone this far.
Might as well go the whole way, right?
Well, go the whole five-year way, because it was a five-year plan, right?
Yeah.
But that's it. Don't be trying to give me a season six, because there's not any more flashbacks, okay? And the show, they've already run out of ideas. But anyway, just give it the 5 years.
Okay, I will.
And, yeah, that's all I have to say about that. And that's all I have to say about that. Was that Forrest Gump, right?
Thanks, Forrest. I appreciate that.
Hey, you know, Arrow is like a box of chocolates. You never know what you're going to get. Smallville is like a Smallville.
What is Smallville like?
Here we go. Smallville is like, you know, you're going on a road trip to go to an amusement park. And then when you get there, you find out the amusement park is closed. That's what Smallville is like. All right.
Yeah, and you drove really far to get there.
And, you know, the sign is still there. And you can see like a model of the park, like in front of the park. But the park itself is not there. Lots of the rides have been torn down.
Yeah.
It did not end the way your trip did not end the way you thought it would. So yeah. I don't know. Maybe we'll just, you know, maybe we upset some listeners with that, but I think you all know what I'm getting at. So but you know what? The road trip there was so fun. I would gladly go on it again.
Well, yeah, the excitement of going there was what you remember the most.
Yeah, you know, hopefully this road trip has been with friends in your car and you had a good time, you know.
Precisely.
And if you say, you know what, even though you went on that road trip and it was long, and when you got there it was disappointing, if a few years down the road you said, you know what, we had a lot of fun on that trip, let's drive back, I would still do it, right? And that's yeah. And that's what this podcast is. Yeah, let's podcast while we're in the car. Well,
It's a journey, not the destination.
Yes, Zach. To quote every other episode of Smallville. Anyway, we'll be back next week talking about one of the worst episodes of season one, Kinetic. But until then, always hold on to Smallville. I just needed someone to talk to. You were just too big.